Greetings, everyone. Thank you so much for your overwhelming response to the season one episodes. The target audience responded very well. In fact, the response was very much overwhelming. And I like to thank you so much for listening to the work that I've been doing through this medium of podcasting, but only in audios. So thank you so much, because generally out these days, the trend is of video podcasting, vlogging and so on. But I thought let's keep the tradition of podcasting alive. That is the audio version. Thank you so much. And with this, I like to start and begin the season two. So in this season, the first episode, I'm going to start with myself as an expert, sort of an expert, but I wouldn't say an expert. Let's not just say expert, because I'm working on it. So I've been working on Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, that is RCEP. It was much talked about. It is still talked about. And India left RCEP without signing, without ratifying, without acceding in November 2019. So yes, it was a drastic decision, but it was a good decision for India so far. That's what all the people thinks. And as a researcher, as economist, as an engineer economist, you know, we all are here to see, basically to research, to analyze, to monitor what would have been the possible, you know, like outcomes, the pros and cons, the boon and banes of India not joining RCEP, or had India joined RCEP. So, and what would lead India to join RCEP? Like that's also important to explore. Like, what if someday the government of India decides, okay, I am thinking, let's join RCEP. So that would, you know, that would be a rush all around the concern offices as to, oh, the Prime Minister or the concern offices, the main decisive offices wants to think that, are thinking about joining RCEP, so let's get to work. So that's also important to explore what will make India join RCEP. So yes, so let's start with this topic, and let's see what we have in our bucket. So let's start what RCEP is actually. It's a free trade agreement among the Asia-Pacific nations of Australia, Brunei, Cambodia, China, Indonesia, Japan, South Korea, Laos, Malaysia, Myanmar, New Zealand, and the Philippines, Singapore, Thailand, and last not the least, the Vietnams. So which constitute basically the ASEAN countries, with five additional countries. Had it been India also, so it would have been called RCEP 6. So that means RCEP countries plus six other countries. Oh, sorry, ASEAN 6. So that means ASEAN plus six countries. Pardon me on that part, please. So basically, RCEP includes a mix of high, middle, and low income countries. So it is expected, you know, like to variate through the free trade. So it's about making the low income countries, you know, like rise basically to somewhere around upper middle, for high countries to maintain their levels of, to maintain their levels, and for middle countries also to rise. So that's the whole idea about the RCEP. So far that's the idea, but that generally does not happen so easily. So that's why these agreements are signed, and, you know, like opportunities are provided, but with opportunities, I think some constraints are also there. So let me give you some sort of a bit of statistics on how the 15 member countries look like. What do they constitute in this FTA, that is Free Trade Agreement Partnership of RCEP? So that is basically, the 15 members constitute basically 30%, approximately 30% of the world population, somewhere around 2.4, 2.5 billion people. and 30% of global GDP, somewhere around $29.7 trillion. So, I mean, this goes back a little bit. So now it should be around 31 trillion dollars, making it the largest trading bloc. So in the east side of the globe, I think that's the largest trading bloc. So we have in east side, we have the, what do you call this, RCEP. So for South Asia, we have Mercosur, and there is the CPTPP, that is Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership. So that is a totally different sort of agreement between other countries. And we also have Indo-Pacific Economic Framework, that is IPEF. So all sort of trading agreements are happening. With IPEF, there are four laterals, basically. So let me just quickly, you know, say those laterals. That is fair and resilient trade, supply chain resilience, infrastructure, clean energy and decarbonization, and tax and anti-corruption. But in this, this is a catch. India does not basically, you know, they're not part of the trade pillar. They opted out. So they are part of the three pillars that I said, that is supply chain resilience, infrastructure, clean energy and decarbonization. And the other one is tax and anti-corruption. So that's the catch about it. And the member countries basically are one of with four largest GDPs, that is India, Japan, South Korea, United States. Countries in Oceania, that is Australia, Fiji, New Zealand. And we have, I think, seven of the ASEAN member states. So that's right there. So with IPEF, Canada is excluded, Taiwan and United Kingdom are excluded because they were included in the TPP, that is the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So those, they were there, but not in the comprehensive and the new agreement, that is the CPTPP. So yeah, so they want to join. They are the potential members. They could be the potential members for IPEF. I think they have made a formal request, or they are about to make a formal request, but let's see, that's with the time and progress that they make. So now we come back to RCEP basically, and the RCEP is difficult. When you read the agreement, like anyone who is researching all around the world, especially in India, I mean, like, let's not get into the, you know, blood rush. Oh, we know RCEP, we know the statistics, we know the numbers. No. So that was my first mistake when I started with RCEP. You know, like, I just went into modeling, I went into seeing scenarios, started building some. So no. But the game changed when I started reading the RCEP agreement. It's a whole different thing. Believe me on this part, and you will see the same, you will see the changes into your own analysis and research work and your understanding of RCEP when you read that RCEP agreement. So RCEP agreement is quite difficult. So the one of the major difficulties is it's, what do you call, intellectual property rights. So yeah, intellectual property rights should be an opportunity for all the countries, all the member countries in this partnership. Unfortunately, it sort of hinders or put a threat or a risk for the member countries who have joined already, or who will be joining, or the potential members, you know. So those were one of the risk that India saw, right? Such as for farming sectors, land grabbing, right? So that was one thing, you know, through intellectual property, right? Foreign investors could buy agricultural land in the country, and that imports of food products from other member countries would reduce the demand for indigenous agricultural products. So that was, you know, something that was a concern to the country. So this cannot happen, definitely cannot happen. Though this hasn't happened so far in RCEP or through RCEP, But there is no guarantee that it won't happen because it's an open article, it's an open section, chapter, which states that countries are intended to ratify to certain conventions of trademarks and intellectual property rights. So this can happen. So this is one thing that I feel that India saw, and it is actually, since it is out there in the agreement, so it's an open threat, open risk for any country who is joining. Again, I say this is still has not happened, but I again emphasize that this, it's an open risk, right? So if any country wants to initiate or has some sort of plans, so this will be dangerous. I mean, it's not just for India, for any other country or for any other low-income country who is not so stabilized through RCEP or like before RCEP and, you know, like intends to join RCEP. So there is a possible risk or a threat, right? So I also find out, I mean, like through various reports and through various research works, that there was claims, claims spread all around the world that India was milk scare, will be milk scare, and Indians were consuming tainted milk. So this is absolutely absurd. It's a data manipulation, right? Let's not come to conclusion as to who was doing it, but it is an absolute manipulation of the data. I mean, there is no shortage of milk over at least next 15 to 20 years in India, so we are very much secured. In fact, India produces the most milk in the world. I mean, like, that is, and this is not just me saying, I mean, like, the National Institution for Transforming India, that is Niti Aayog Planning Commission, formerly known as Planning Commission of India, Government of India, reports that by 2033, India's milk consumption would be 292 million tons and production would be close to 330 million tons. Again, I mean, like, this gives a, like, you know, like, we are producing more than we are consuming. So I don't see how it is a scare or how India is going into milk scare or is into a milk scare. I mean, this is absolutely absurd with no confirmations, though the statistics say differently. The reports, it's an authentic report, it's a Government of India report, Niti Aayog, as it is acronymed, National Institute for Transforming India, Aayog, that is Niti Aayog Planning Commission, as I said, formerly known as Planning Commission. So I mean, come on. So those are the things, and so those were the challenges. This is some of the challenges that the farming sector, agricultural sector was fearing, and that imports will be, you know, cheaper, they will be made cheaper because tariff removals will be there, and a lot of things will happen, there will be competitive advantage to other countries, and flooding Indian marketplaces with their own goods, cheap goods, you know, constantly lowering the value realized by local farmers. So I mean, like, it was a threat, it was a risk to join, and I think India responded quite well, and well, as in terms of, you know, for the whole population, for the whole country. So the government thought very well, though there were quite a few protests, significant protests, not just few, significant, strong protests, but I think they were peaceful, and the government responded very well in the favor of the nation, not just one group, one party or anything. So they responded in the favor of the nation. I think that's something to take from their decision. But let's not say that they responded by not joining RCEP. We should also see how can we join RCEP, because we were part of the initial, you know, like, setup for RCEP. We were there throughout the agreement frameworks, you know, meetings since 2012. So we need to understand, like, how can India join RCEP? So what will make India join RCEP? I think there are a lot of programs, good initiatives, and schemes being launched by the government of India that can firstly make India strong enough, you know, in itself before we join RCEP. I think that's a very good driver. People see this as a barrier. Oh, you know, like we're talking about make in India, we're talking about made in India, we're talking about self-reliant India, that is Atmanirbhar Bharat. So if we become strong, we will be in a position to absorb small shocks or any other shock that RCEP would give us when we join it, if we join it. So we need to be very strong. And I think if we are not strong, the only person that is to be blamed or to be that should be concerned is the citizens, not any organization, not any institution. I think it's just the citizens, we all people of the country, right? Because we didn't become stronger. We didn't find ourselves in a way to become stronger. We don't have any methodology. We don't have any plan to become stronger. We just rely on the government. And it's also vice versa. The government is relying on us to become stronger because we are also part of the country. It's just not the government or the government officials. We all are part of the country. So we need to understand that we all together need to become stronger. Take some steps, take some measures, introduce policies so that we become stronger. And in the course of joining certain trade blocs, trade agreements or partnerships, frameworks, economic frameworks, we can absorb those shocks quite easily, should be quite easily, because we are a very big country, we are a very populated country, we are fantastically placed country in all aspects, education, people are doing very well outside India, within India, everything is fine with us, but there are certain things that we do wrong. That is, one of them is that we rely a lot on the government. And it's vice versa. The government is relying on us also. So we need to come together and start thinking alike. That's my take. So no offense to anyone if it is. So yeah. But we have seen, right, the manufacturing. We need to increase manufacturing, right, so that we become strong. We need to bring in new technologies, advanced technologies. We need to get developed, become better with machineries, with skill-based workers. We have probably one of the highest unskilled laborers around, unskilled workers around. We have a very strong skill and vocational program. And that industry in itself should be enough to convert unskilled laborers to semi-skilled, to skilled workers. I think the promotion, the awareness is all there by the government. But unfortunately, our own people does not want to get involved into those programs. There may be some financial restrictions that might be holding them from such an endeavor. But I strongly feel, but we are Indians. We can do it. We will find ways to accomplish such initiatives. We need to find such initiatives, such, you know, ways to achieve our task. We need to move from unskilled laborers or workers to skilled workers. This will only increase our, what you call, our income, because I strongly believe, I think, and what the government has also set the bar to, that the unskilled workers are paid less, of course. So in other words, we will be increasing our own purchasing power, right? So let's just say, when we convert ourselves from unskilled to skilled workers, the manufacturing increases, the variable cost will remain fixed, and fixed cost per unit will decrease. Thus, total cost decreases with the increase in the production level. This should, I think, ultimately lead to an economic growth, that is GDP, raising the standard of living with lowering of total cost. And I think that will also raise the wages. The aggregate supply, when we come to the AS and ADs, so the aggregate supply increases, shifting the AS curve to the right as the productivity increases, which is quite certain, or the price of the key inputs will fall, making a combination of lower inflation. This will lower inflation also, and higher output is expected, and lower unemployment rate is possible. So of course, when we educate ourselves, we have a very good chance of getting employed, right? Our skills can be put to their own, to their, you know, to the right places. So education is important, right? And education is just not about reading books. It could be about learning skills. Education comes in different forms. So yeah, let's just not stick to, you know, the one way of, you know, we go to the university, we go to the school or colleges, and then we learn out of books, we give exams and tada bye bye, and we got some sort of education. No, it's just not limited to that. Learning a skill is also an education. Applying that skill, applying that education, applying what you've learned, that part of, is also an education. Everything you do becomes an education when you try to implement, when you try to learn, right? So never stop learning. So once you learn, once you get educated, yeah, you can start as an unskilled worker, but then I would say that we need to move on. We need to keep learning. We need to change our status from an unskilled worker to semi-skilled, and further to, ultimately to, in fact, to the skilled worker. It's not a big journey. It's not a difficult journey. All we lack is the intent. We don't want to, right? We don't want to. Let's not want to or something. Let's go for it. Let's not stay at one level. So that's the idea. So in all other words, that India has a potential to become strong just by being self-reliant. And just self-reliant does not mean you start producing things, right? So it's a whole, you know, different sectors, industries are involved, and, you know, ultimately it's the people who chooses how to become self-reliant. But I feel education is one way to start with, to put in your skills. Take one skill, not many, not two or anything. Just one skill is enough to start with. Eventually, when you start with one, the momentum will lead you to many other skills. So that's the part. So with all of these things, so now let's come back to the trait aspects of ourselves and India, of course. So India is a trade deficit country, and it's not a shame. Trade deficit countries do good, but our efforts have always been to become a trade surplus country. Australia has an investment problem because it's a trade surplus country. I have been trying to find an answer. If a country becomes a trade surplus, does it lead to investment issues? I am not certain if I should believe or not, but I would love to find a solution on this part. And the trade balance, of course, with the RCEP countries does not look good, at least with the large economies involved. So in RCEP, so basically India needs to, you know, like control, if not, you know, get to the trade surplus, we need to control our trade deficit. We need to invest and see how our savings are being, you know, made, how we consume. And we need to create a lot of opportunities for the domestic manufacturers to the industry levels to produce and to the production units. So we need to see that. Yeah, this is the decision of not bringing Tesla to India was, I think, very much justified by the minister, she Nitin Gadkari. You know, it will create a lot of unemployment. In that sense, I agree, but I have no other reason as to why India should bring in Tesla. So, I mean, if there is a problem, if it could create a problem with the Indian citizens, then I don't think so that we should bring Tesla. Though, of course, we all love Tesla. We would love Tesla. But if it's not in the favor of our nation, I think, sorry, sorry, Elon, I mean, we don't care about your product, right? So Elon Musk can go to hell on this part, right? We don't care about his product. So our nation is to be first. Always our nation is to be first. The service before self is important. The importance of that should be learned. So now moving forward, let's see how things can, you know, change. So, I mean, we need to see this from a point of view that, like, do we want to join RCEP or not? Let's just say India has an intent of joining RCEP. What we need to do? I think we need to become strong. As I already mentioned, we need to become strong. We need to become self-reliant. India is a land of minerals and ores. The soil is good. The produce is good. Of course, all of this is dependent on weather conditions. So if it is raining properly or not. And in today's time and in this 21st century, things have not been in our favor, of course. But then does not mean that it is highly effective. And the climate change issues are coming in with extreme events happening unannounced. Of course, they don't announce themselves, but then they're like happening in whatever season they're not supposed to happen. So untimely extreme events and, you know, massive changes that changes the nutrients of the soil because, you know, things are not there, you know, it's not raining properly. So the produce is not there. The minerals are not there. So the NPK does not reach the soil properly. So it lacks. So the quality of soil, you know, it's deteriorates basically, in other words. And of course, if it rains too much, the soil erosion and lot of other factors, of course. And yeah, I mean, we, in other words, but with the challenges there, but still India is very much sufficient and it's full of nutrients, minerals, in its soil, and it's quite rich, but that does not lead us to, you know, like underestimate the risk that RCEP may possess if we join. So it's an open-end agreement, you know, which says agricultural land could be, you know, bought by foreign investors and technology transfers would be done and things will fall off. Right. So, I mean, like, that's a problem. That's a massive problem. So the thing is, we need to understand how to combat these things. What can we do to combat these things? In other words, let's just say if we can remove, we can can be exempted from a particular article of the RCEP. Let's just say we remove the intellectual property right from the chapter of intellectual property, right, which says the article, we remove the article and which says like, okay, the lands could be bought by foreign investors, agriculture lands could be bought by them. So how things will change? Will India push, start to think about RCEP? So that is one possibility. So our barriers needs to become drivers, right? So that's the challenge. Can we do that? Can we make them do that, right? Would RCEP with Japan, South Korea, China, Australia, right? So all of these countries, will they agree to it? Like that's the question, right? Because with New Zealand, there is a problem. So New Zealand, which exports 95% of its butter, right, it will get an open market. 84% of its cheese will be, you know, it exports, and 93% of its milk powder is exported to the countries, to other countries. So India will become a free market for it, right? Approximately free market, because we can't lower all the taxes. We will go beyond 90% for sure, but that would also take some time, right? Currently, for milk powder and fats, we have a tariff of 60% and 40% respectively. And if we polish them, Oh my God. So we could probably threaten livelihood of about 200 million families in India itself, which is not a joke. India is a population of 1.42 billion people. So 200 million families, come on. So what are we looking at, right? So we need to be very strong in our decisions, and we need to understand, in fact, like, what are we going to do with such things? So our barriers need to become our drivers. So how to make them is, like, if we want to join RCEP, somehow we feel like, oh, India should join RCEP, even though there was a hefty, significant protest from at least three sectors, that was farming, manufacturing, and there was some sort of political opposition also to RCEP. But that is fine. Political is basically politics. But in this case, it was not politics. It was for the country, for the people of the country. Every organization came together. Even the opposition came together. And they supported one notion of India not joining RCEP. And it was very much enthusiastic protest. But the good thing was the government of India was there to listen to those notions and to listen their reasons. And they find in nutshell that, yeah, I mean, like, this is a risk. It's a high risk. We can't risk. I mean, like, you know, small percentage we can risk, but then it's a massive risk when it's more than to our limits. Ah, come on, we won't be doing that. I mean, no government in this country will be doing that, right? So that's the problem, and that's we need to understand. For manufacturing, I mean, despite efforts to enlarge our shares, India's industrial production has remained constant for many years. And that too, I guess it's about 15 to 17% of GDP, which is not a good indication. I mean, like, we need to increase. And while we are at it, we lack significant technological advancements into our own manufacturing sector. That is one problem. And it will be a constant problem for us if we do not increase our research and development expenditure. Right, because if we cannot give the R&D money, how are we going to improve? We can't constantly rely on technologies from foreign partners or foreign investors, because they will also cost money, right? So Indian manufacturers face supply side challenges, which includes probably somewhere around lack of adequate infrastructure, poor roads, though Mr. Nitin Gadkari is doing fantastically through his ministry in building roads and infrastructure, transport infrastructure. But still, we are constantly improving. But again, it's still on a downside. We need to build strong infrastructure. And I think he's the right man to do the job with the passion that he has for his work. I mean, that is commendable. So we have frequent electricity shortages. I think luckily in Delhi, we don't have that much shortage. But yeah, when we talk about India, I mean, like, it does not matter when, like, Delhi has shortages or not. But country is above any state or any union territory. No doubt about it. So we need to figure out the electricity shortage problem in the whole of India and to see how we can sort that out. I also see that logistic costs are estimated at 13 to 14% of GDP compared to just 8% in developed and wealthy nations. Meanwhile, rigid labor regulation discourage businesses from expanding past a certain scale and entering a worldwide market. So that also becomes a problem. So India's present economic trajectory, with sluggish growth and weak consumer demand, Joining RCEP will make the uncertainties worse and could lead to job and income losses, which we cannot bear, which cannot be able to afford. That means the shock that we'll get from joining RCEP will be massive. Already we are losing jobs because of an uncalled recession that we had through COVID-19 pandemic. Right, IT sector took a hit and I think it's still tackling it, but should be doing better in a few months. I certainly hope so. They're all out there, you know, could secure their jobs and the industry could get proper investments to hold their own employees, though no firing, mass firing or any sort of firing, please. Right. So, given the India's trade imbalance, likely said that India is a trade deficit country, and since 2012 by 13, and if we compare the data with 18 by 19, we have doubled within these years, within the 7 years time frame, we have doubled our trade deficit. So that is not a good sign. Of course, we need to restrict. Being a trade deficit country is not a problem, but then it won't lead to so much problem if we can control to a limit. So that should be a challenge. But we are also looking at a challenge of becoming a trade surplus. Right? We need to become a trade surplus. Why not? India is a big country and everyone deserves a good life. Everyone deserves a good living standard, at least a bare minimum living standard. I think we are very much an underestimated a union of people, right? So we really need to come together. And with this trade imbalance, local manufacturers were already facing a tough race, especially with the Chinese goods. I think China factor has been the massive one in, you know, like for India not joining RCEP, because we are already flooded by Chinese goods at a very cheap price. We joining RCEP will give China probably a free passage, literally a free passage. Right, so that's not a good signal. The RCEP-led talks on steel, oh man. Yeah, I mean like if people have read, or if you have not read, I encourage you to please go out and read RCEP documents, and especially the white papers, the agreement, actual agreement. And you see what I want to highlight basically through my podcast, that is, it's a threat India presently sheltered steel industry by permitting imports from China, the largest producer of steel in the world. Of course, it's China. The government was persuaded by India's bicycle industry to keep the labor-intensive production of bicycles out of the RCEP discussion. Right. So what happened was, like, our government, because we are intensive, so it's a problem. And, you know, like, our opposition back then, you know, like, not the party. I mean, like, more opposition came from rubber, basically, plastics, aluminium, machine tools, paper, automobiles, and many other industrial sectors, not to join RCEP, you know, and it will threaten the country. So, in the core principle of Make in India was to generate jobs, you know, to kill this unemployment. So that was the main point of, you know, like introducing Make in India, to increase production, to increase manufacturing, to become reliant, to become self-reliant, pardon me on that. So that was, so the vibrant manufacturing holds the key to export. Absolutely, that was the core principle of Make in India initiative. Made in India was like, okay, inviting foreign MNCs, you know, and then, you know, trying for them to set up their factories, industry in our country, and then made in India, right? Make in India by Indians, of course, not just made by India, made by Indian citizens, we are not in favor of, or we are not these programs does not says that it should be made by you. Open a industry or factory in our country or a manufacturing unit in our country and you invite experts from outside. No, we have our own experts in all sort of dimensions, in all sort of disciplines and fields. So of course, I mean, made by Indians, of course, these programs should have that. The people who will be part of this initiative should be Indians, should be Indian citizens. I think that should be the primary guideline of this, these initiatives. So that's how we'll become self-reliant, right? That's how we'll include more people. That's how people will get jobs, right? They'll get employed. And of course, ultimately, the unemployment rate will come down. But we also need to see regional diaspora on unemployment as to, is it geographical or is it territorial, right? So let's just say 6% unemployment, although it's a very high number, but let's just say 6% unemployment rate. So 6% is calculated, let's just say, for a particular region of 100 people. So 6 out of 100 is 6%. Fantastic. But so do we need to focus on those 6 people, or when we calculate the same compared to, let's just say, to 1,000 or to 1 lakh person, right? To 1 lakh people. So are we focusing on the percentage, or are we focusing on the number of people? So that's the difference between geographical and territorial inequality, right? So basically, coming back, so India didn't push back against these provisions during the negotiation processes, but such changes were rejected by most other RCEP members, making India's withdrawal likely, which is no doubt that Japan, South Korea, Australia, they want India to be part of RCEP. No doubt about it. I mean, like, they are trade surplus country in some way or the other, right? Australia is a trade surplus country. Yeah, of course, we're going to work on the Australia problem of investment, like why their investment is down. Is it just because they are trade surplus country? We need to look into details of that, right? But with others, so there is a thing in Japan that our Minister for Commerce and Industry, Mr. Piyush Goyal, was addressing an event, he says the national spirit in these two countries, Japan and South Korea, is extremely high, and it's extremely good to notice. So what happens, let's just say they make some sort of steel. So they'll use, despite having free trade agreement with India, they will buy the steel, let's just say they will buy the steel from India, but they will make use of all the steel that was first produced in their own country. And if they need more, if they need more and they see that we don't have left any, then only they use Indian steel that was, imported through an FTA. So such a national spirit, I think, should not be in Japan or China or Japan or South Korea. It should be there in India too. I'm not saying boycott. I'm saying first use our own made products, right? Domestically produced products. Let's buy them first. I'm not saying don't buy them, of course, but we also need to understand that when we buy domestically produced products, we need to assure quality also, quality of high standards, right? We need to assure that. We can't just rely on okay, if it is like in our national currency, if it's like 10 rupees product, so no. That 10 rupees product is not a quality product. Definitely not. I'm not saying it won't be, but right now I'm assuming it's not a quality product. If we make a quality product, of course the price will go high. And I think we need to buy that high priced product. How much it will go? Twice? So if it's a 10, it becomes 20. We need to work on this, these notions that we need to produce quantity also, but with high standard quality. Right? So we need to strengthen our quality safety and quality check units, departments in this country. Right? That we need to do. And I think we've basically understood, we got an idea of as to like whether RCEP is a good move for India or not, right? I think we should join RCEP, that's not a doubt, but we need to understand that joining RCEP should be in favor of our citizens as a whole in the country, right? We can't just join RCEP because some other RCEP members are saying us to join because we were part of the initial, you know, framework and initial agreements that were happening through before ratifying. So, right? So we can't do that. We have a big population. We need to think about them. And then only we can, you know, like figure out like, yes, whether we need to join RCEP or not. If it is in favor of those people, of our citizens, then only. And if it is not, let's make our barriers in turn our barriers into our drivers, right? Because of course we are Indians, we can do that. I mean, like, if you want an article, if you don't see an article favorable to our nation, why do we need to ratify to that article? We can have that exempted. We can absolutely have that exempted. That could be our like negotiation, part of a negotiation. Like, we won't ratify to this article. We want this exempted for our country. Right? And meanwhile, we need to keep on, making ourselves strong through education, through converting our unskilled workers to semi-skilled and thereafter skilled workers. I think that will be one way to look at. There could be many possible ways, many combinations, permutations, so to this RCEP situation. And we are happy to speculate. I mean, of course, we can speculate any method, any strategy on it. I feel one is this. So I'm going to work on this particular strategy to figure out what the results are, how our GDP looks in, how the trade looks in, what will happen if we lower the tariffs. Meanwhile, what will happen if we, you know, lower our NTMs, non-trade measures, right? So let's see how those things react while we include the specific parts of RCEP agreement that are of high risk into our simulations of CG modeling or statistical analysis. So let's see how those things work out. You guys stay tuned. I'll be back with probably another guest in the next episode, right? So we'll be talking about some topics of your interest, absolutely of your interest. I hope so on that. And I think I'll have a distinguished guest next time. So you guys stay tuned. And good to see you. Of course, I can't see you, but then good to be here again after a long time. And good to start this season, not with a bang, but of course, I mean, like, with something more serious and more relevant, right, a more significant topic that involves the whole population, the whole country into a decision making. You know, one slight deviation, things can go wrong, right? So this is the kind of work I really like, you know, like I enjoy, and I like to continue on this path, and let's see what we come up in a month or so about this thing. I think I'll probably have a working draft of my ideas. So far I've discussed what was there in the papers, in the literature, and what I made of it, right? What I could think of it, how did I conclude it on these things. So just to mention, I think I have basically discussed two papers, right? So one is Understanding India's Exit from the RCEP, a Two-Level Game Conundrum. So this paper is authored by Dr. Arshad Iqbal Dhar, right? And the second paper that I discussed is Evaluating the Reasons for India's Withdrawal from RCEP, a General Equilibrium Analysis. This is by Sachin Kumar Sharma, G. Badri Narayanan, and Adit Dobhal. And I think there's another author, pardon me on that. This is Raihan Akhtar. So most of the discussions, most of the facts and figures, the numbers that I've used, most of them are from their papers. And these papers have been very well written, very well researched, right? No doubt about it. I think they have read the RCEP agreement, as I've been encouraging to the audience. They have read the documents. So that's why they have come up with some good numbers and some reliable numbers. So yeah, let me see what I can make of these numbers, because this is a pre thing. I'm working on the present scenario, what will make India join, and more importantly, what happens if India joins. So you guys stay tuned. I'll be back with those two verticals in another episode of Research with NJ. Thank you very much. Stay tuned. Good luck, guys.